Welcome to the Connect the Dots podcast with Jeffrey Klein, part of the Shareable Podcast Network, and sponsored by AIQ, a snackable newsletter of AI news for busy professionals. Jeffrey engages in conversations with a diverse group of successful people, exploring their stories and the dots they connect along the way. The hope is to inspire your journey and find ways for you to connect your own dots. Here's your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is Mike Caput, a globally recognized marketing AI expert, author, and speaker. In his role as Chief Content Officer at Marketing AI Institute, Mike helps some of the world's top companies understand and adopt AI. He's also the co-host of the hit podcast, The Artificial Intelligence Show, and co-author of the book, Marketing Artificial Intelligence. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
I am thrilled and always enjoy chatting with you, but now it's a little more official. I start at the beginning. So where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
Where was I born? I was born in Euclid, Ohio, which is right outside Cleveland, where I don't live in Euclid now, but live right outside Cleveland at the moment, which is great. My mom used to work, well, I was mostly phasing out now, of being an HR executive at a variety of banks.
Is that because AI is taking over her job?
No, I think she was just maybe tired of the humans at her job at some point, but she's semi-retiring at the moment. My father is retired at the moment, but he used to be a dentist.
Nice. That's why he has such a pretty smile.
Yeah.
So, as a kid growing up outside of Cleveland, did you have any thoughts when you were younger of what I want to do when I grow up?
Honestly, I'm not sure I had that many formal thoughts, no like big one thing. As a kid, and this translated into adult life, always loved writing, reading, telling stories, whether to my friends or just writing them down. So that's always been like a thread throughout my entire life and like my interests, and that carried over into my professional life quite a bit.
Tell me a little about you before we get to your transition into tech and AI. What's your background?
Yeah, I have an interesting, varied background, I would say, at this point. When I graduated college, I studied political science, mostly because I was extremely interested in the world and what was going on in it. Also in college, studied Arabic a bit. So I was doing some language stuff and ended up studying abroad in Cairo, Egypt. And after I graduated in the teeth of the Great Recession. So I actually ended up moving back to Cairo for a few years and fell into being a journalist. I had like really strong writing and editing skills, and like obviously English language skills. So for a couple English language magazines in Egypt, I was a journalist and editor for a bit and also doing a ton of freelance stuff. And then from there, when I came home, had continued doing like the freelance writing thing. And then actually translated that, I wanted to get out of purely just writing for a living. So I transitioned a bit into marketing. That's actually where I first met Paul Raitzer, CEO, founder of Marketing AI, and moved up the ranks to the leadership team at that agency before I don't even know if it was a huge pivot, but my next chapter in AI.
Let's back up a tiny bit. So you're political science, a writer, someone who's interested in content. What about your interest in kind of technology? So obviously, a lot of what you're about, even if you're on the periphery, and one of the things I like about AI is you can be like me, an NTG, a non-technical geek, and still really use all this stuff. Well, were you into gadgets when you were growing up? What's your background and experience and interest in technology and or innovation generally?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Honestly, unlike probably some of the people in the field now, I didn't grow up too much like getting obsessed with coding or building gadgets or hardware or anything like that, but always using computers and early internet obsessively, I would say. But it was, and especially in my journalism, content marketing jobs. But as a kid, honestly, my biggest exposure to a lot of the stuff that ended up becoming really important was through science fiction. Like, I'm a big science fiction fan. I was just like obsessed with science fiction books growing up. So really understanding both the really positive and really negative visions that people had for the future, different types of technologies, obviously, like, I have to admit that would be like my top exposure to artificial intelligence was just in those stories and just getting geeked out about the idea. overall. Obviously, it doesn't bear any resemblance to what is in a lot of those books. But yeah, I would say actually it was the storytelling around technology that was like my first and original love of this stuff.
Yeah, because I'm a gadget person. I do like gadgets. I don't like building them. I like using them. Is there a moment in your career and getting into the current role that you feel like was a switch? Was it moving into the marketing AI? Like, when did you realize, oh, my life is changing in a good way?
Yeah, I think it was probably that transition to working at Marketing AI Institute, because the way this ended up working was that Paul had spun off and started Marketing AI Institute while owning and running the agency. So I was working full-time as a marketing agency professional, but also moonlighting, helping Paul get this thing. Mostly we're just producing content at the in the very early days, much before we had an event and all this other stuff. So even in those days, I would still have classified myself as like just mostly a marketer, just interested in AI, learning a lot about it. And then I think you really transition into where you're like, oh my gosh, this really is different, as the Institute expanded and we started actually using the technology itself. And that just went into hyperdrive with ChatGPT, because then suddenly it's, oh my gosh, wait a second. Not only I was fine using the technology before and knew plenty about it and how to be dangerous with it, but it was really then where I was like, wait a second, like my core superpower is language and words. And this is how you now build these tools and interact with them. I was like, done and done. This is feels a weirdly like I was made for it, which is nice.
And it's interesting because I've heard this from various people. They said, I'm a coder, that the new language for coding is English. And I think that's the new language of technology is English. And the ability, the natural language is, I'm like, yay, I'm a English major.
Yeah, exactly.
So in your current role, and wasn't it a seamless transition? We were moonlighting, and then when Paul decided, okay, we're all in on this. Did you have any hesitation? Did you?
No. At that stage, obviously, everything with any type of startup can be uncertain. But I was like, I'm pretty early on, based on the research I had helped Paul with for his second book with on AI way back in 2014 or 2015, I think it was. That's what kicked all this off before. And the Institute starts like roughly end of 2016, I think. Mm-hmm. That whole project alone convinced me that if this trajectory holds, like this is going to be the thing. And then there's plenty of years there where, to be fair, you don't see a huge amount of signs of it, though. Honestly, there's very little doubt in my mind that if there's one thing I'm going to bet on, it would be AI becoming some type of pretty significant force in what we're doing every day.
But if you, you know, I've heard Paul tell the story about kind of like the thankfully that GPT moment happened.
Right.
Because it seemed like you guys are working pretty hard in what's pretty much a niche up until then, and being like, hey, people, are you going to get on the? And thankfully, OpenAI helps you in the floodgates to everyone being impacted by AI, and you guys being like, yeah, now's our time.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was honestly almost night and day just how much like where we were already where the puck was going. That can be very lonely for, and also costly, obviously, for running a business. So just because you have high conviction, timing does matter. So we were lucky that ChatGPT, once that came along, it's, oh, okay, everyone gets what we've been saying for years now.
What do you find most challenging about your current role?
Oh man, most challenging. I'll do one AI related answer and then one general answer, but they're probably related. The AI related one is just keeping up. It's like, this is literally my job. I'm like obsessed with this, and it is really difficult. Like I miss, I'm sure for every couple things I get right, there's about 20 others that I completely miss entirely. I genuinely don't tell people like, hey, you need to stay on top of this as best you can, but don't beat yourself up, because we run a weekly podcast where this is what we do, and it's still really hard to keep up.
I think of it as a trickle down in a way that works for me, which is because I think, listen, write, talk about AI as well. So I feel like it is a lot of my kind of daily thoughts. Keeping up is something that I feel pressure. But one of the things that I like that you and Paul talk about is, so you and Paul are listening very carefully to the actual people in the AI companies and thought leaders, and you become thought leaders. But it's like, you aggregate all that to help people on the podcast and your newsletter. And I'm one of those people who's like, ah, great. Thank you. And so you're one of my trusted sources. And then I get four different newsletters. And it's like, I just created a custom GPT for AI news because I've started a new newsletter. I'm like, let me just give it to me really in bullet points so I can pick out the one that I want. I don't care about that. I don't care about that. But it is a challenge, I think. And if it's a challenge for people like you and Paul who are in it every day, oh my God, for the normal person. And I think that's one of the challenges generally with AI is that people are getting the soundbite media version of what's going on, which is not always under the whole thing that things happen in terms of, oh, wait, this happened. And people, they share news and people are like, I didn't want to know that. And they're like, it's definitely something that doesn't keep me up at night, but my brain is always, what else is going on? And then something new comes the next day.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk the flip side. What do you find most rewarding about your?
Most rewarding is simply that there's never a boring day. There's a good flip side to this being overwhelming. It's like you will never get bored. And really, too, just I find it both professionally and personally extremely exciting and empowering. They're like, oh, okay, you know, I'm a kind of an ideas guy. Historically, sometimes I have too many ideas, too little. Hey, what did you do with those ideas? You've got this bank of 200 ideas. Why aren't they moving forward? So that's always been, there's been a big gap between aspirations and what's actually happening sometimes. I find it so much easier and so much more rewarding and doable now to turn my ideas into stuff, into reality, into tools, into processes, into things that just tangibly make my life easier using AI to do it. And that's really exciting to me. It helps get me out of bed in the morning. It's, wow, I have five different ideas for ways that I can save a ton of time or learn something really cool new, like enrich my life in some way. And there's half a chance that today we might be able to build that.
So I want to follow up on learning stuff and professional development, personal development, because I think it offers that opportunity to anyone. You want to learn something, AI can help you learn it. Can you think of a kind of specific where AI kind of facilitated that personal growth for you rather than just on the professional?
Yeah, I'm a big, big believer that AI for personal growth is probably going to be, if not already, like a huge, huge trend. You know, you have to be cautious about it. There's people already using AI for therapy relationships. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying like necessarily go do all that, but there's a lot of ways in which AI has already helped me from a personal growth perspective. There's the simplistic, like I have AI tools that help me plan healthy meals, budget my time better, reach goals every week, plan out my, you know, week, get stuff done, like a much more effective person overall, thanks to it, but also kind of macro level. Like one tangible example is I for years have loved you know, doing various personality tests and reports and assessments. I've worked with like coaches to do like dozens of pages of like Myers-Briggs results or, you know, Enneagram, all these kinds of things, not just online quizzes, like actually working with people to better understand it. So I have this kind of library of four or five pretty serious in-depth personality tests that were really, really helpful to dump into increasingly smarter models. Like basic ChatGPT was awesome to use those documents with and better understand myself. But stuff like O3 is crazy to drop it in and then say, okay, like not only that, but can you remember this stuff about me? Can you next time I ask for advice, like filter it through this lens or something? So that's been really cool to experiment with.
Yeah, it makes me think of your mother in HR. Like a lot of these people, they're going to have access to everyone's Myers-Briggs and they're going to work with this person and this person because they complement each other and work with each other and things like
that.
And
I think
it's definitely the people impact is going to be enormous because of its ability to synthesize the data in a way that leads to better results.
Yep, that's absolutely true. It's going to be really interesting. I even use it and you could pick your poison, like doesn't have to be Myers-Briggs or whatever, but you can use these tests to understand how to better communicate with your colleagues. There's no reason you can't. It's like pretty easy if you don't know someone's Myers-Briggs, you can like guess at parts of it, right? You can say this person's more extrovert, introvert, whatever. You could literally have, if you want, AI assistants that help that frame your emails or your communications through those lenses. It's positive for everybody. You're not like doing anything wrong, I don't think, if it helps you be more empathetic and a better communicator.
Yeah, for me, everything's about effective communication. That's how we connect with people. And it's I think what you're getting at is it can help you be the best version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, a great goal for how AI can really integrate into our lives. It's allowing us to recognize things that we might not see otherwise.
Yeah.
And now we can take that feedback in a positive way and go from there, which I think is really phenomenal. Now, you're a father now.
Yeah.
And with a very young child. Would you say you're more excited or scared for his future?
Honestly, I'm more confused than ever about his future, because I'll be honest, this maybe is selfish to say, I'd be more worried if he was older and starting to use this stuff already, because I think it's so impactful and transformative already. And there's so little figured out that I'd be scrambling right now. I'm hoping I've got some time. I hate to say, as I know you've got kids.
I'm
not
older. I'm confused as well.
But also I think even just long-term, I'm okay, he's 11 months old. What is this going to look like when he's college age? Is there even going to be college? I don't even know, because that's so long on the trajectory that we're on. I'm really being forced to reevaluate any assumptions I have.
So I like to play this where we go back in time. So if you could give one piece of advice back to your 21-year-old self, knowing what you know now, what would it be?
That's a really good question. I would say, honestly, one piece of advice would be more about just don't be afraid to double or triple down on the stuff you know you're really good at. I spend a lot of time, there are definitely huge gaps and issues in my own life that I had to resolve or still have to resolve. Everyone's got weaknesses. I'm not saying you should ignore them and not work on them, but I probably spent even more time being let me get that thing that's below average up to average. And so you have these other things that are way above average. You should go even more all in on those as well.
Yeah, there's a book and an assessment called, I think the book's called Discover Your Strengths. So that's the Strength Finder. And basically what I got out of that was there's a conventional wisdom. Oh, you're not good at this. You need to work harder to get better at this. When really, no, you need to focus on
exactly
the things you're really good at. And then I was saying, get someone else to do the stuff you're not good at.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with that. I think that's really good advice. You are in the C-suite of a budding startup that's trending in all the different ways. And a lot of people would say, Mike, your parents could be proud you're a success. But how does Mike Caput define success?
I would say, I don't know if this sounds trite or not, but honestly, I define success by trying to measure against myself yesterday and focusing on, am I growing? And that's really it. Obviously, beyond, there's minimum thresholds of, hey, I need to not be unable to pay my mortgage, or I don't want to be on the street. I don't want to limit opportunities for my son or my family. But beyond a certain basic threshold, it really is, okay, do you know what direction you're going in? Are you focused on actually wanting the right thing? And if those answers are yes, then are you growing towards that? And I'm not in a rush even to grow towards that, but I don't like what I would guess I would call, I forget who said this, I didn't make this up, but 0 days where it's okay, we just treaded water. I've had them, everyone has them, but I hate where the days where it's okay, I feel like I improved anything at all.
Well, I there's a saying that I think is pretty funny, which is, even if you fall flat on your face, you're still moving forward.
That's exactly it. I like that a lot.
And I think, again, it's about progress, incremental progress. You might not make progress today, but if you're making it this week, that's okay. You guys are very involved with, I think your mission is AI literacy for all. Can you tell me two things? What, if someone's, I want to increase my AI literacy, what would you tell them to go do? Other than listen to your podcast.
Yeah. I would say at a very baseline, you need to establish a foundational understanding of just what AI is and what it means to you. Selfishly, we do an intro to AI class about this, but whether it's our class,
it's just great.
Free. If go to introtoai.com if you're interested in that, it's totally free. But regardless of what you do, you don't need to go take 25 courses right out of the gate. A, take AI seriously. B, understand what's possible and roughly what trajectory we're on. And C, what does this mean to you in your career? And that last part's an ongoing journey to figure out. B, But you do need to start taking very seriously the fact that you're going to probably need to take some ownership over your career, your business as it relates to AI. This is not just going to be another thing that you're going to have to manage. It will be the thing that impacts everything else. So if you can even get to that, I think that would be foundational AI literacy. And then realistically, in very tangible terms, after you've established that baseline, a good, really good starting point for most people would be go build some custom GPTs that do stuff in your job or in your life.
I concur. What about, so you're involved in the AI Literacy Project, which is an initiative from the Marketing Alliance and Smarter X. Can you tell us just a little bit about that and what you're hoping to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so this is on smarterx.ai. That's our kind of parent company here at Marketing AI Institute. And you can find it, I think it's under resources. The AI Literacy Project is part manifesto, part roadmap. And the idea here is AI is literally going to impact every single knowledge work job on the planet, not just marketers, not just executives, not just entry-level people, every single possible function. With the technology alone that we have today, much less what's coming down the line. And our whole thing is that we need to get much more serious as business leaders, as companies, as professionals about fostering AI literacy for all, which kind of, again, means that like at a baseline, understanding what AI is and how you can start using it in your role. And so the AI Literacy Project lays out a number of phases we're taking in relation specifically to our AI Academy learning platform that we offer to really make that accessible to every organization on earth, hopefully, because I can't emphasize enough, there's not a single person in any organization listening that doesn't need AI literacy or won't if you want to compete. And frankly, too, there's an increasing responsibility, I would argue, on the part of business owners and leaders to be helping your employees prepare for what's coming, because we're probably headed for some pretty rocky terrain when it comes to AI reducing headcount, leading to layoffs, obsoleting the need for certain roles. So it's on a lot of people to start preparing your workforce accordingly.
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of fear, obviously, with people. And I use the phrase, the genie's out of the bottle, and we can't put it back in. I love Paul's three types of modern organization: AI emergent, AI native, and obsolete. If you don't embrace, you don't embrace AI, you may not survive.
Yep.
But I think one of the other elements that I'm fascinated by is the human touch and the human element. And I know this is something you've talked about, maintaining that human touch when you're talking about AI-driven projects. So in the age of AI, it makes me think, what do you feel makes us uniquely human?
Honestly, year after year, I'm more and more uncertain about that question, just because AI is now doing a lot of things that you would consider uniquely human. I think my best rough answer at the moment would be, obviously, relationships, both in person, virtual, what have you, however you define that, become even more important. They've always been the glue that holds humanity as a species together. It's literally in our DNA. But I think that becomes any type of however you're building authentic relationships, that's going to maybe be the only currency you even have moving forward.
But having our irises scanned, don't forget that part, for identification.
And I think, too, people often say, like, creativity. I think that's still true. I think that our unique kind of human brand of creativity, I certainly don't think we're the only ones with creativity out here now. I think AI can be quite creative, actually. But there is this kind of nebulous idea of, like, agency, right? It's like we, in our best moments, or you can really cultivate, like, being above the API, kind of. Like, that we are the ones that can figure out really unique, interesting ways to mix, reuse, combine AI tools, AI systems, AI outputs to make something that's greater than the sum of its parts. So whatever you want to call that, I think we've still got that. And that's probably the way forward.
Alchemy. Kind of, we'll call it alchemy.
Alchemy. That's a really good name for it. Yeah. Yeah.
AI moves super fast, faster than any other technology. And as you even said earlier, the challenge of keeping up. What do you think the next big thing in AI is in the next, we'll just say, 12 months? And I know you guys think about your timeline, which you might need to adjust every now and again. But if you're going to be like, you're talking about if you were going to bet on something, like, this is going to be a big change in 12 months in AI, what is it?
My guess would be I might be a little longer than 12 months. My guess would be AI agents or more agentic AI. Like we're already seeing kind of the basics with, and basic, it's still incredible. It's like OpenAI and Google Deep Research, like being able to go produce these in-depth research reports agentically on their own without your involvement. That alone is incredible. I don't know if we'll get to the full promise of AI agents in the next year, but I think you'll see more applications like that where people are going to start waking up and be like, wait, it can go do what on its own? I think is going to really open the eyes of a lot of people that may not be following this stuff as closely as possible. Does that mean I think a year from now you're going to have a perfect AI agent that does everything for you? Probably not. But I think there's going to be a lot more agentic capabilities in the tools that you are getting familiar with as an AI kind of forward professional.
I hate to say it again, but I concur. I have sometimes have arguments with people, and we're arguing, and we realize we're agreeing. It's like we're in
You're
heated
right.
agreement. So now's the portion where we get to some rapid fire questions. Although, as I know in your podcast, rapid fire questions don't always go as rapidly as you'd
No, they
them to.
don't. No, they don't.
So we'll see how we go here. If a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
Who would I want? Oh gosh. I honestly don't know. It's funny because I've had like many people tell me I resemble Seth Rogen. I don't always agree with that personally, but I'm too close to this. So, for lack of a better answer, I'd say screw it, Seth Rogen.
A great actor. Well, I think
I like his stuff.
we're watching The Studio at the moment,
Oh,
and
yeah.
so I think with a lot of comedic actors, they don't get credit for their actual acting talents because they're funny. But I actually think he's one who does have actual talent, and he writes and he directs and he does a
Right.
lot of different stuff. Speaking of which, can you name one of or two of your favorite movies?
My favorite movies. Oh my gosh. I have to say, Gladiator is one of my favorite movies. Just a sucker for that one every single time it's on. I would also say I am a pretty big Star Wars and Indiana Jones fan. So, especially the original trilogies of those were like my childhood.
As they were mine, and they're just mind candy
Incredible.
and soul candy. Can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
Yeah, for sure. A lot of them. But one that always comes to mind and was thankfully in the cultural just discourse lately is Dune, is one of my favorite books. I've read that book probably every other year for since I've been like 10. So
And are you
big
a fan of the
Dune
movies?
fan. I love the movies. They're great. I honestly didn't think that book was filmable, and they proved me wrong. It was awesome.
This is a silly, not silly question, but maybe challenging. What is your favorite AI tool?
Favorite AI tool? My
I know.
gosh, I don't know.
One of your favorite. We'll qualify it.
I'm gonna say one of my current favorites is because otherwise it'd probably just be like ChatGPT or just type of for how much you can do with it. But honestly, the deep research stuff, especially Google's deep research, there's all these cool new features that I just discovered in. I think they're pretty recent where you can like not only do your research but create a website and infographic from it just by clicking a button. That's just
Crazy.
really cool to geek out over.
Name one of your favorite emojis.
Emojis. Oh no. I use the crying laughing emoji very, very frequently. So I would say
On
that.
its side.
I've always done the one that's not on its side, but also like
Oh.
I might just be using it wrong. I have no idea.
Yeah, I'll have to find a book on emojis. Ask
Ask right. Yeah, I
Google
need
to give
like
you a deep research paper
a
on emojis and what they
yeah.
say about your psychology. Can you name a favorite non-digital activity?
Non-digital activity would be, that's a good question. I like cooking quite a bit when I have the time for it.
Like to bake, so there
Yeah,
you
nice.
go. What's one thing you can't live without?
Can't live without some way to either write down or express my thoughts, whether it's write it pen and paper, document, or voice memo, if that's a cop out. But yeah, you could give me nothing else and I'd be okay, I
You're
think, if I had
a
those.
writer through and through. So
Right,
I like that. Writer's got to write. If you could be credited with inventing something,
right.
either that currently exists or does not yet exist, what would it be and why?
And just because I've been thinking about it a lot, like probably a way, I'm sure these exist, but like a bulletproof way to be less reliant on my smartphone and less addicted to it. I'm not too bad, but I've already noticed, especially the young kid around now, and he's always trying to go for it. He obviously is not doing any like screens or anything, but I'm like, oh God, this is going to be just a nightmare. I wish there was like a button I could flip on and be not have to worry about this.
A little dome comes across right, you with a force field that where the phone cannot
enter. Yeah, exactly.
If it enters, it's disabled. Mike, this is super fun and I could talk to you all day. But I want to give you an opportunity. You've been really generous with me. Is there anything at the moment that you're promoting, want to share about what's going on with you?
Yeah, I would just say the big thing we have coming up, it's not for a while now. It'll be in October, but is our marketing AI conference, Maicon, Maicon.ai is where you can learn more about that. It's an incredible annual event that we're bringing together probably about 1,500 plus marketing and business professionals, plenty for non-marketers at this event as well. If you're looking to get that kind of in-person community connection and actually learning from some of the top people out there who are experimenting with AI, it's an incredible event. So check that out if you are interested. But that's a big thing we're about to start looking towards next.
And I can echo that as someone who's went and already registered to come. It's nice. Amazing. And one of the things that I always think that's important to mention is that although it's got a marketing bent, if you're interested in AI at all, it's an amazing, like the sessions are really impressive. And you guys, and the event itself is put together in such an amazing, inclusive way. And I'm excited about it even now. So yeah, and I'll make sure it's in the show notes. What about if people want to connect with you more like online or in social, what's the best way for them to connect?
Yeah, I would say the best way to reach out to me is probably through LinkedIn. Honestly, that's probably like where I'm most active professionally. So it's just Mike Kaput, K-A-P-U-T on LinkedIn. Pretty hard to miss, but / Mike Kaput also if you use it that way. So yeah, that'd be feel free to always, you don't have to justify reaching out to connect or message me. Like just always happy to hear from people that are following what we do.
Mike, I want to say thank you for being someone I admire, always very generous, for coming as a guest. It's really been just a great, it's just been too short. I should have extended it, but never mind. We'll do 2.0 at some point. But I just want to thank you, especially for helping us connect the dots.
Hey, anytime, Jeffrey, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast sponsored by AIQ. Subscribe at AIQnewsletter.com. Music produced by Sam Miller. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. If you could do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes, I would really appreciate it. Remember, story matters and is the best way to connect the dots.